Veterans of Vietnam, Veterans of Radio. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Robert Siegel, with All Things Considered.
Going back to Vietnam through the sounds that were most like home to American GIs, radio on the battlefield.
We're an underground radio station here, and we say what we feel like saying, and we bring the truth to the first-termers in the Republic of Vietnam. We also bring you hard acid rock music all through the night, the up-to-date music of today's American youth.
Underground military and enemy radio from Vietnam. First, this news update. This is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm John Hockenberry. On this Veterans Day, we bring you a story about radio during wartime, about U.S. soldiers in Vietnam and the broadcasts they listened to during the war. Radio voices fighting for the hearts and minds of the American soldier.
My radio was just like my rifle. My radio was wrapped up in black tape, wrapped up in a Prick 25 battery bag, taped down to keep the moisture out. Music kept me sane.
Far away up in the highlands, we had transistor radios. And in the middle of the day, way up north near the DMZ, we could listen to Diana Ross and the Supremes and all the popular groups that were out that time. And it kept me feeling close to home.
From Saigon, this is the American Forces Vietnam Network, presenting Million Dollar Music for the Aquarian Age.
When most American soldiers in Vietnam turned their radios on, the strongest signal came from the official military radio network. But they also listened to propaganda stations set up by the enemy and to unauthorized pirate stations rigged up by their fellow GIs. These underground stations and even the enemy broadcasts from North Vietnam became more popular as the war dragged on. But the big sound for Americans came from AFVN, the American Forces Vietnam Network. Bob Casey was production manager.
We gave the guys as much stateside sound as if WABC, which was then the god of all AM radio stations in the United States, was right in the middle of Vietnam. Not talking about the war, talking about other things. So the guys could turn it on and constantly have that sound from home. My show, which was on from 10:30 on a Saturday night from 10:30 at night till midnight, became the third most popular show in Vietnam. It was the oldie show. Again, in my feeling of entertaining the troops, I thought it was important that I get their heads out of Vietnam, get their heads out of the military, and to go back to the sock ops in high school.
Good morning, Vietnam.
I'm Romas Tiscus. I was in Vietnam in 66 and 67. And I used to just roll my eyes. You know, you get this, good morning, Vietnam. It's a beautiful day out there. And I go, what in the hell is he talking about? You know, where in the hell is he broadcasting from? You know, we had just been mortared and rocketed.
Vietnam, hey, hi, hello, good morning all over your face. How do you feel? 7:20 now on the day after Thanksgiving, right? You have some turkey yesterday? I hope you did, as we kick open the doors to the Don Buster right here in the Big VN with Army Specialist Les Howard Jacoby saying, good morning, Vietnam.
They always try to keep everything upbeat. They were trying to project that you're at some surf party in Santa Monica or something. And when I was over there in 66 and 67, I can remember we listened to a very sexy, sultry, good-looking girl. I would have loved to have met her, you know, because you get these images that, you know, would make you belt in your shoes.
Our clothes.
And I'm sure that was done by design as well.
And if you haven't written me to play a song for your unit, why don't you do so today, okay? You can write to me, Chris Noel, care of the American Forces Radio and Television Service. The Ventures in the background with Aquarius Let the Sunshine In, which was a big one for the Fifth Dimension.
But, you know, getting back to my point, you know, after you've been mortared, you know, and your buddy is lying next to you dead or is screaming for a corpsman, it somehow just doesn't fit.
Some soldiers and DJs were resentful when songs were banned from AFVN, sometimes because of their supposed anti-war lyrics. Again, Bob Casey, formerly of AFVN.
We had to cut the middle of a song out. The cow sills and hair. Oh, say, can you see my eyes if you can't? We had to cut that piece out of the record because some major somewhere thought that was derogatory towards our national anthem. And here, the cow sills, the all-American milk-drinking family of 1968-69, we had to forbid the playing of Cloud Nine by the Temptations. It had to do with marijuana. Or Satisfaction by the Stones because it had risque lyrics to it. We were censoring stuff to the guys that are in Blood and Guts. The last people in the world you'd want to censor anything from.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Army Specialist Bob Lawrence with 5 minutes of news compiled from commercial and military news agencies.
Military officials also tried to censor the news on AFVN. The network avoided stories that could hurt the morale of U.S. troops or politically embarrass the U.S. military. For example, reports of American setbacks in Vietnam or of anti-war protests back home. Jordan St. John was an AFVN newscaster in 1969.
We were totally controlled. The network there was totally controlled by the military apparatus. So we were, in fact, although called a news operation, were really a propaganda machine for the military. And we couldn't say anything negative, even though that was reality. It was reality that there were anti-war protests going on. It was reality that troops were refusing to go out on certain patrols, to go down on certain trails, to take part in ambushes. And we weren't allowed to say that on the air in American Forces Radio, but it was in everybody's newspaper they were getting from home anyway.
Don North was in Vietnam as a reporter for ABC News during the war. He says that AFVN's optimistic war reporting made some sense in the early years, but that changed after the Tet Offensive in 1968, when the war expanded from remote provinces into the heart of Saigon.
Most of the GIs I knew sort of, you know, winked at the news they heard, but not until later in the war, after Tet, did they really seem to be broadcasting such sterile news that it flew right in the face of reality, what the average GI was seeing. When you found in the height of battle, with the country coming to pieces all around you, and Armed Forces Radio News consisted of, you know, what was happening at the state fair in Burning Stump, Montana, then its credibility became simply destroyed.
Vietnam vet Jerry Clark says the censored news made it harder for GIs when they finally came home to the States.
If I could have heard this on the radio and people saying, hey, when you get home, you know, you're going to run into a mob scene, there's people back there protesting, us being over here, there's people spitting on people at the airport, then I think it would have made things easier coming back here to the States for a lot of guys because, I mean, you're not part of what they call the great melting pot anymore, you know?
Official military policy on censorship was the same then as now. The Armed Forces Network cannot air a story if it endangers troops in the field or if it would offend the host country where it's being broadcast. This issue resurfaced in Congress this past summer, when Armed Forces Radio in South Korea censored news reports about student demonstrations and Korean human rights abuses. During the Vietnam War, the ethical questions over censorship were more difficult. Barry Zorthian, former spokesman for the U.S. mission in Saigon.
Because as things deteriorated in Vietnam, when there was a disruption and near mutiny in the ranks and some units and so on, it would be very, very tough to know whether to broadcast that kind of material, which was in U.S. news media. If you broadcast back to troops that Charlie Company is in a near mutiny, what are you doing to your troops?
Even Bob Casey, who objected to most music censorship, believed in a certain degree of restraint.
You don't over there start communicating that we got to get out of this place, even though that was the most popular song over there, very much banned by Armed Forces Radio, but the song We've Got to Get Out of This Place. But the thing is that you didn't do that. I mean, the last thing you want to do is tear the guy's morale down. They could die if their expertise and morale do not stay in top form. And especially you don't want to blow a hole in the bottom of a ship when you're riding in it.
But there were radio stations that played the band songs. By the time of the Tet Offensive, U.S. soldiers had their own ideas about propping up morale. An entire Vietnam counterculture had grown up, and with it, underground radio, with a different message of drugs, defiance, where the enemy was the U.S. military establishment. This radio underground began simply enough. A soldier could play radio announcer by lifting the handset of any combat field radio, finding an open channel, and talking. Marine veteran Bill Earhart.
Regularly, when you were out in the field, would use that band to sort of, would bullshit, and that we called it the bullshit band. And you'd be sitting around at night and get on and say, hey, hi, I'm from, Percy, Pennsylvania, or wherever, anybody out there from Pennsylvania, and people would talk back and forth on this thing. Well, about the fourth or fifth night that we were up at Con Tien, a couple guys from the bunker next to ours came running in, all excited, and told Wally, our radio man, that he had to turn on the radio, that there were tunes, people were playing music on this thing. They got him to turn the thing on. Well, he couldn't get anything. We're inside this bunker, so they tell him to put on the whip. This is a big, long, 10-foot thing that he screws in and sticks it out the door, and sure enough, here's rock and roll music. And it was certainly by no means sanctioned radio transmission. You were forbidden to use that open channel for anything except emergencies.
GIs did not just broadcast to each other over Army field radios. A few actually rigged up their own FM transmitters, creating pirate FM stations.
Good evening again, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host for the next 3 hours of hard acid rock music, Dave Rabbit, and my studio engineer, Pete Sadler. For those of you who have just recently come into the Republic of Vietnam, I'd like to give you a little information about it. We're an underground radio station here, and we say what we feel like saying, and we bring the truth to the first-termers in the Republic of Vietnam. We also bring you hard acid rock music all through the night, the up-to-date music of today's American youth.
Underground radio stations were not widespread and usually didn't transmit far, so many soldiers never heard them. But there were several broadcasting over the course of the war. Troops in the 101st Battalion tuned in the mysterious Kelly and his radio Li K. The 11th Armored Cavalry heard Radio Black Horse. These stations served their own communities with a vision of public affairs distinct from the military.
Blowing a little grass now. Going back into music by Steppenwolf called The Pusher. Speaking of The Pusher, brothers and sisters, if you happen to be down by the Magic Finger Lounge anytime tonight, keep away from the Korean at the front door. He's pushing some bad H. I repeat, he's pushing some bad H.
You know I smoked a lot of grass. Oh, Lord, I popped a lot of pills.
Bill Davis was one of the radio pirates. He was also a high-tech aircraft engineer. And when he arrived at the Karat Air Force Base in the summer of 1969, he discovered that some of his colleagues had set up an illegal FM station in his barracks.
The station was mobile. It moved from locker to locker and barracks to barracks and around among friends and sort of a, an underground network. It was a small gray box that was just hanging on the wall or stuck inside a locker and plugged into, someone's stereo, and they could have the whole thing locked up and it wouldn't even be visible. We played what we wanted to hear, and it turned out a lot of other people wanted to hear. It got to the point that it was being played in the hospital, it was being played in the chow hall. You could go around and hear it all over the place.
It would travel on the street, Although the military officially outlawed these underground stations, in certain locations, officers looked the other way, perhaps for the sake of morale. In any case, the military didn't knock itself out trying to shut the stations down.
It became a common thing at commander's call that they would, oh, by the way, do you have any information on a clandestine radio station being broadcast? And you go like, gee, no, I've never heard of it, you know, sort of thing. Occasionally they would come around in the back of a pickup truck with a something that looked like a two-prong sort of fiberglass fork, and they were always pointing at the same group of barracks there, and we just shut down. There was always someone sitting out on the steps. They would always yell, here, you know, here come the pigs. And it was fun. It was fun to do. It was exciting. And we were fighting back against the military establishment and against the war. It was a real in-your-face sort of thing.
Instant request line. Spencer Davis Group. I'm a man. This is a dedication to the United States Army. Army sucks. That was called in by General Creighton W. Abrams.
Vietnam veteran Doug Wellman.
In 1972, we were challenging each other to see what kinds of pirate signals we could broadcast. And my joke had to be taking a turntable up in this aircraft. And on the flight I did it, we had a crew chief who got an air medal or some medal for shooting down 7 of 11 MiGs. He was playing the electric war game next to me, and I'm broadcasting Louie Louie and Aqualung to these pilots at the same time.
Besides these unsanctioned radio shows, there was another English-language alternative to armed forces radio, broadcasts from the enemy. By 1969, the North Vietnamese spent 4 hours a day broadcasting to American troops.
You are new here, and we don't expect you to believe us when we tell you how bad it is. It is a flat, scary jungle, thick with scrub trees and tall grass. Hot and wet in intermittent rain and strong tropical dragonflies and Viet Cong sniper bullets. You are a long, long way from Fort Riley now, and there is no JC Cafe in town on Washington Street where you can sit around the counter eating hamburgers and sipping coffee without having to be afraid a bomb might go off, like it did at that restaurant in Saigon a few weeks back. You can get killed here. Get out while you are still alive and before it's too late.
Of course, the U.S. had its own radio stations broadcasting propaganda and disinformation to the enemy in Vietnamese. The U.S. spent more money on propaganda radio. But the North Vietnamese were very resourceful. On occasion, Radio Hanoi let activists like Jane Fonda and Abby Hoffman broadcast to American troops. In other instances, the North Vietnamese broke into frequencies used by U.S. battleships and aircraft. Again, former Navy flyer Doug Wellman.
We were able to fly missions occasionally where we would get messages during the missions that pertained specifically to us. Say a secret mission, very quiet, and you're off the coast, and it's not like no one knows you're there, but you know that very few people that are your compatriots in the gray uniforms know you're there. And on would come this message directly to our aircraft, directly naming each one of us, telling us what we're having in our box lunches, maybe naming a couple of things on the aircraft, like a book or something that was there before flight time, a few hours before flight time, and I would imagine was carefully scoped out by a Vietnamese compatriot on the ground. And so within an hour or two after takeoff, they'd have all this info that seemed like they were on the airplane with you, like a spy was in your midst.
The news about the war in North and South Vietnam.
Hanoi Hannah was the Vietnam equivalent of World War II's Tokyo Rose. Many soldiers dismissed Hanna's programs as lies and absurd propaganda. But in the chaotic period after Tet, when more soldiers found armed forces radio to be a stale whitewash, Hanna played the music the GIs wanted to hear, and even her newscasts gained some credibility. Jerry Clark is a combat vet from the 82nd Airborne.
We never knew what was going on in country from one unit to another.
but Hanoi Hannah used to get on the radio at night if you did get a chance to listen to her. And she would actually say what units had heavy losses inflicted upon them and by whom.
Vietnam vet Mark Lumpkin in Philadelphia.
You know, another thing she was able to do was give you sports results. She was giving you the American League, the football, and she was giving you the results before you heard it on the Vietnam radio. I mean, you could take book and know the score ahead of time. There was one occasion I remember where a guy was in Nam and the Red Cross was trying to locate him at a fire support base to tell him that his wife had a kid and she had the information. And that's the scariest right. thing in the world when you hear it over the small transistors we were having in the field. And everyone would look at this guy.
Among certain soldiers, Hannah was something of a legend, a cult figure, addressing individual troops and their units with what seemed like near psychic ability. But transcriptions of her broadcasts show that in reality, Hannah didn't name individual soldiers or units very often at all. More often, Hannah tried to get American soldiers to question their own presence in Vietnam, or defect.
How are you, G.I. Joe? It seems to me that most of you are poorly informed about the going of the war. To say nothing about a correct explanation of your presence over here. Nothing is more confused than to be ordered into a war to die or to be maimed for life without the faintest idea of what's going on. Isn't it clear that the war makers are gambling with your lives while pocketing huge profits?
Hanoi Hannah had a special pitch for black and Hispanic soldiers. Eddie German, a Vietnam vet in New York.
She appealed to us by saying things like, well, in the 60s, there's this whole thing about soul brother. So she used to say, come on, what are you doing, soul brother? What are you doing fighting over here when at home down south you can't eat in a white restaurant? What are you doing fighting? This is not your war, soul brother. And after that, she would play Aretha Franklin, maybe three records straight, which is what we wanted to hear. We didn't care about what she was saying, really. We were just listening to the music.
Kiss me once again.
For Americans fighting in Vietnam, everyday experience could be a frightening event. Not just the bombs and battles and blood, but the terrain they walked, the language they heard, the people they met. Radio brought music and messages with a familiar sound to a place many felt was the end of the earth. And to many GIs, it didn't matter who was broadcasting. Story on Vietnam Radio was produced by Jonathan Schwartz, Alexis Milner, and the staff of Interlock Media. With NPR's Ira Glass, it's All Things Considered.